medical care on Maine's island communities. In most places, when someone has a medical emergency, they can depend on an ambulance to pick them up at their home and take them to the closest hospital. But if you live on an island, that is not usually an option. An emergency involves a lot of logistics, such as boats and tides and weather conditions. And emergencies are just one of the ways in which medical care is challenging on the islands. Most don't have healthcare clinics at all, so getting a vaccine or monitoring a chronic condition can be challenging, even in the best of times. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will find out how medical services for islanders have been affected by the pandemic. And we'll hear stories from an island doctor who has just written a book about his experiences. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're going to discuss how Maine Islanders get their health care. As you can imagine, it can be a challenge. My guest, Dr. Chuck Radis, who is a primary care physician serving Maine Islands and the author of the new book, Go By Boat. Also with us, Sharon Daly, who is a registered nurse and the director of Island Health Services for Seacoast Mission. We invite your questions and comments. Do you live on an island? Do you want to share your stories of getting medical care? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. That is a different phone number from the one for Maine Public's Spring Sustainer Pledge Drive. Again, for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. Chuck and Sharon, thank you so much for joining us today. And Sharon, I want to start with you. Reading about Seacoast Mission and the boat that serves the island, the Sunbeam, has been around since 1905. That is so extraordinary, more than a century. How did that start off, and what has it evolved to be?
It was started, as you said, in 1905 by two brothers, the McDonald brothers, who kind of looked out at the islands and the lighthouses and realized that they really didn't have anybody serving them for their needs and decided to serve them spiritually and medically. So they visited the people in the lighthouses, and they had a sloop that went from island to island. And our boat, the Sunbeam, is now the fifth boat.
And I understand the Sunbeam is pretty high tech.
It is, and it was built to accommodate a lot of people, because when we're on the islands, we love to have people come aboard and be a gathering place. A lot of the small islands don't have gathering places, and so for people to come aboard the boat, that's great. And then we have a room that was made for into a medical room with all kinds of medical equipment so that we can do telemedicine.
All right. And are you only seeing, Sharon, are you only seeing patients on the boat, or are you also doing house calls when you arrive on islands?
Oh, I do. We do a lot. The whole crew does a lot of walking on the islands and home visits. So we have set times for medical appointments, and then people come aboard. But I also make home visits and just walk and see people. You know, as they drive by, they stop and talk. And we're out on the dock when the lobstermen are coming in. So anyway, to be with people and see what their needs are.
And which islands do you serve, and what's the home port?
Northeast Harbor is the home port now for the Sunbeam, and that's where our new office for the Maine Seacoast Mission is. And we kind of have a normal schedule of going out every 2 weeks for medical appointments, and that's Frenchboro, Idaho, Matinicus, and some on the Cranberries. But we also do some things on Swans, and Islesford has a home land-based telemedicine units, and we get also to Monhegan. And then Douglas Corman, that works with me, who is the director of, he also goes to Monhegan once a month. So, I also do an elder care group, and that includes the Peaks Island, Casco Bay people.
All right. And before we turn to Dr. Radis, Sharon, I understand that the boat has not been able to be out during the pandemic. When do you expect to be able to go back to your routine, back to the pre-pandemic schedule?
I'm really happy to say next week we're starting. So we're really looking forward. You know, we kept contact with people through Zoom and other ways, and we've been to seven islands doing the COVID vaccine clinics, but those were really, you know, not long visits and not time to really see people for very long periods. So next week we're going to do Frenchboro, Islaho, Matinicus.
Dr. Radis, bringing you into the conversation, and first of all, congratulations on the book. It's just a terrific read. I so enjoyed it. And I want to start from the beginning. We talked about how the Seacoast Mission, the Sunbeam, or another boat, has been serving the islands in that part of the world since 1905. But when you arrived at Peaks, there was no such service, correct?
Well, at that time, a family practice doctor had just recently decided to leave a very part-time practice on Peaks Island. And that's been the history of healthcare on Peaks Island and some of the difficulties all the islands have, in that most rural communities, if they have a caregiver, they draw from 5, 10, 15 miles away. Other people in rural areas may come into that small town. Whereas the islands, you know, they have as a fixed year-round population, there's really never been enough to be able to support practitioners year-round. And luckily, on Peaks in the late 70s, MaineMed had been donated a building on the island. It was actually a cottage. Kind of out of tragedy, a family had lost a family member to suicide and donated the house. And MaineMed transformed that into a small clinic. But it was kind of a revolving door of people trying to make an island practice. And then in 1985, when I was able to be placed on the four year-round Casco Bay Islands as part of a National Health Service Corps commitment, things were kind of at a low ebb again. And so there's always been people active, as they are up the coast, you know, trying to put together some type of on-island healthcare to deal with so many of the problems that people have, just like in any other community.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Your book is full of colorful characters. I'm sure anybody who knows Maine's islands or even Maine's coast is not surprised by that. But I want to ask you if there are certain medical conditions, certain problems that you are seeing over and over and over again, and are some of them more pronounced on the islands or not really? Are they the same kind of challenges that any Maine community faces?
Well, I think one of the differences would be in the kinds of conditions that people see out on the islands would be that if a practitioner comes to set up a practice on an island, they're likely to deal with every possible illness that can occur, rather than if, say, you're in the Portland area. I think primary care practices are kind of self-selecting. You know, if somebody has significant heart disease or an early cancer, or they often have specialists that they're seeing outside the community. And so I think the thing that was usually the most challenging aspect of practicing on the islands, and I would just want to make sure that your listeners know that, you know, really my book is about from 1985 to 1991, when the islands were the poorest neighborhoods in part of Portland, or Chabig Island, also part of Yarmouth. These were very poor islands, and so people didn't leave the islands with their diabetes or their heart disease or their hypertension or any a number of problems unless they were really at wit's end, in which case they would schlep into town by ferry, and it would take, you know, the better part of a day for an office visit.
Mm-hmm. Sharon Daly, you've been doing this work for 20 years. I'm wondering how it has changed over those 20 years.
You know, I think Maine and the islands are changing. I think population has gone down on some of the islands, and there's more seasonal people. I also think in some ways transportation has gotten harder because rates for the ferries and the planes have gone up a lot. So going off for a medical appointment is really expensive.
How has telemedicine, you mentioned that in the beginning, how has it transformed the ability for islanders to seek care? Or is it not really as transformative as we might think because of internet access?
During the 20 years, I think it's changed things a lot. We offer primary care, and the providers that we work with really know their patients. Most of them have some kind of a link to the island, so they know the people. And if they don't, they've built up a relationship with them. You know, I always use the example is if somebody goes off island because of hypertension and they're put on a medication and they are told to come back in 2 weeks for a blood pressure check, they don't tend to go back to the mainland because it's time lost from work and it's very expensive. But with us being there, I can check their blood pressure and I can set up an appointment with them for the provider. And, you know, all the providers are great. We, you know, for lobstermen, we try to make it a late day appointment so that, you know, because if the weather's good, they're going to go out and fish. So you kind of have to work with people as to when they can get there. So I think it's, you know, and I also do the flu shots and a lot of health promotion type things. So I think it's telemedicine has done well for the islands, I think.
Both of you live on an island, and Sharon, I'll start with you. How do you think that changes your perspective for being someone who not only serves people who live on islands, but as an islander yourself?
Well, people from Etinicus would say I don't live on an island because Islesboro is so much bigger and so much closer to the to the mainland. But I do think, you know, there's certain logistics about getting medication and knowing about boats and weather and what an effect that has and, you know, sense of a small community. So I think all of that has helped me in being there.
And Dr. Radis, for you as well, you know, you are seeing your patients all day, every day, even when you're not in the clinic. You're seeing them on the ferry, in the coffee shop, when you go for a walk or a run.
That's true. And so there's, you know, the old saying that I know a lot about the people I see every day. And likewise, they know a lot about myself and my family, as would be true about it. Any community. If I could just return just for a minute to the telemedicine comments, in that it really has evolved, but there are significant limitations to it. A great thing for diabetes and hypertension checkups and everything, but for you know, the patient with weight loss, the patient with a nagging cough that hasn't gone away despite a course of antibiotics, there are many, many situations where hands-on evaluation, you know, isn't going to go away anytime soon, and that the rollout for telemedicine, you know, which we hope, you know, would be kind of the answer for remote settings, hasn't always lived up to its billing, and that even though the situation up the coast has worked really well. You know, I've been in meetings where there have been problems with connections. There have been problems with follow up with the same provider, and so I just would caution, not caution. I just would say that that with the epidemic, there's certainly been a move toward telemedicine, but it's not going to be replacing hands-on evaluation anytime soon.
It's not going to be replacing people like you. And Sharon, would you agree with that, Sharon?
I certainly think there are things that telemedicine does not work well with. I think the kind of telemedicine that I've been able to do on the boat is a lot different than like what people are doing on Zoom, because on the boat, I have a stethoscope, so if the provider wants to listen to the patient's heart and lungs, that they can. I have an otoscope if they have an ear infection. I have a handheld camera, so if they have a suspicious mole or sore throat, I can take a picture of it and freeze it, and the picture's on a big screen TV so that the provider can look at it. I think it makes a difference if there is a nurse there that knows the patient and that's helping to present it. I work with a little bit with a neurologist at Mass General. He's been doing telemedicine recently, and he knows the people he's seeing, which I think is part of the thing. But he said he loves seeing them in their home because he gets to know them a little bit more. He knows more about them, and they're more comfortable so that they talk more. I think for counseling sessions, it works really well. I think people on the islands really embrace technology, I think, before people on the mainland because, you know, having a laptop and being able to order from Amazon, that's a great thing for an islander. So they're more comfortable with that. I think counselors had a hard time getting used to it, but once they got comfortable with it, they like it. And, yeah, hands-on is important for sure, and I'm not I hope that never goes away, but I do think that telemedicine can work well.
We're speaking with Sharon Daly, who is with the Maine Seacoast Mission, and Dr. Chuck Radis, who's just written a book, Go By Boat, about being an island doctor. We're going to take a quick break and hear about Maine Public's Spring Sustainer Membership Drive. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. By the Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine, inviting you to learn about Maine's Holocaust survivors at the Michael Klar Center in Augusta. And by New England Cancer Specialists, committed to helping patients achieve their best outcome. Proud member of the Dana-Farber Cancer Care Collaborative.
Thank you, George, and thank you, Jennifer Rooks. We're here, and this is Maine Public Radio. Good morning, Mark Vogelsang, along with Scott Marshallton, taking just this brief moment to encourage all of our friends who either are members or who have yet to decide to become a new member of Maine Public to support this great opportunity. It's our spring, what we call our sustaining drive. It means being intentional about your support for independent journalism, for incredibly important conversation with institutions like the Maine Seacoast Mission and the Maine CDC, and the work that Jennifer and the team of Maine Public Radio News does day in and day out. Your gift makes a huge difference. And Scott, there's lots of ways to give and incentives for people today, right now, to make a gift.
There certainly are, Mark. And you can share your support by calling 1-800-866-1475 or going online at mainepublic.org. And when you do, if you have never supported Maine Public before, all new donors will automatically receive a $40 gift voucher to use at a participating farmers market statewide in locations like Augusta, Bangor, Belfast, Camden, Brunswick, Norway, Presque Isle, Skowhegan, Fairfield, all over the state of Maine. We've partnered with Lee Auto Malls, who've made these vouchers available for Maine Public. Again, if you've not yet supported Maine Public, now is the time to do so. Take advantage of that voucher, share your support, be generous.
I think in communities across the state, Scott, just thinking for a moment about all the farms that are getting ready. You know, the plants are in the ground. We know fresh vegetables are going to be coming soon. And whether it's those great folks along the banks of the river here in Bodenham and Richmond, in every community across Maine, people are working in the gardens, getting ready for these wonderful bumper crop of farmers markets. We're going to offer a $40 voucher thanks to Adam Lee and our friends at Lee Auto Mall. And, you know, the good thing about that is it's one hand helping another. It's a helping hand across the community. This will spur investment in farmers markets across the state. So if you've never supported public radio and you'd like to today, you'll get a voucher worth $40, as Scott mentioned. And you can do it simply by going to Maine Public Radio or mainepublic.org. You'll see all the information there. And work with us on whatever works for you. whatever works for your family budget, whether that's a monthly gift of $5, maybe it's a monthly gift of $50. But we've also had folks who give regularly at $75 or $100 a month, and that's our beacon level at $100 or more. But the fact is, it's the participation that matters, right, Scott? We've got folks all across Maine.
We're approaching 55,000 households, Mark, right now supporting Maine Public Radio.
Wow.
It takes every household that supports us to make the work that we do happen. It's today, days like today, where we go on air asking for your support. You can share your support at 1-800-866-1475 or, as Mark mentioned, online at mainepublic.org. So many good reasons to support public radio, support Maine Public Radio. And the show Maine Calling is just another prime example of how donor support does so much for Maine Public. A conversation like we're having today, it's your support that makes that happen. Again, 1-800-866-1475, online at mainepublic.org. Be generous and thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're learning about healthcare on Maine Islands. Joining me, Sharon Daly, who is Seacoast Missions Director of Island Health Services, and Dr. Chuck Radis, who is a primary care physician serving Maine Islands and the author of the new book, Go By Boat. You can share your comments or questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Of course, that number is different than the number for the Spring Sustainer Drive. Calling in now, Amy Tierney, who lives on Long Island, who is chair of the Wellness Council there. She's also coordinator of the Wellness Center. She's an EMT, town clerk, registrar of voters, and code enforcement officer assistant. Amy, thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you for having me.
Which hat are you wearing today?
Wellness, I guess.
Okay, great. Well, tell us about the Wellness Center on Long Island. How did that come into being?
In 2016, after I'd had some work with my dad, I decided that we needed more healthcare on the island. So we formed the Aging in Place Committee, put the board together with our, you know, mission of helping people stay on the island, supporting caregivers, reducing isolation, but most importantly, developing medical services. And we quickly morphed into the Wellness Council with our biggest goal to build the Wellness Center, which we did open in 2018.
And what happens there? What kinds of services are people on Long Island able to access that they were not before?
So Maine Health is our anchor provider. They come twice a month. The bulk of those clients are lab work, blood pressure checks. It's something that was taking 4 to 6 hours to go to Portland to do, but now is 15 minutes. We've had a dentist come and do cleanings. We've had a physical therapist, acupuncturist, the USM nursing students come out and kind of practice their skills and check vitals. We have a library of durable medical equipment now. We host flu vaccine clinics there. We've had a series of COVID vaccine clinics this year. We do talks. We have speakers anywhere from talks on ticks to gut health to advanced directives and estate planning.
Wow. Amy, it sounds like it's really made a big difference and really transformed life on the island.
I think it really has. We were kind of closed down for a while during COVID, and when we opened back up, it was just amazing how much traffic we had missed and how much people appreciated being able to get there and, you know, be seen, because a lot of people didn't go to Portland then either, so there was a lot of stuff that wasn't addressed.
Right. So the pandemic, instead of being something that hurt the Wellness Center, really has highlighted how important it is to the island.
It sure did. There was people that my mother hadn't left the island in a year and then broke her leg. So now she had to leave, but she's back. But she's using the nurses to, you know, keep keep tabs on her.
So. Well, Amy, thank you so much for calling in. Amy Tierney lives on Long Island and wears a lot of hats, including as founder and coordinator of the Wellness Center. I really appreciate you calling in. And that's a really interesting question, Sharon. I'm going to turn to you about the pandemic and how people on islands are already hesitant to leave. They like living on islands. There's a reason they live on islands. But the pandemic has changed life, it seems like, even more dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, people were not only reluctant to leave, but also reluctant to have people coming. And, you know, a lot of people have come to the islands. And I think everybody, I think because it's a small community, that a lot of people really took it very seriously about trying to protect their neighbors. And when we did the COVID vaccine clinics, I think we had a really good turnout for those, because I think people, even the younger people, realized, you know, they might not get as ill, but they're in contact with their neighbors and they wanted to keep their community safe.
All right. And Dr. Radis, something you write about in your book is about the hesitancy of islanders to leave the island. And I have to say, some of the passages are pretty funny, that the lengths that people will go through not to leave.
Yes. And I think there's still, you know, it's not just the time that it takes to coordinate with a ferry. And by the way, our ferry service during the pandemic really was dramatically reduced, and to the point where some people were having trouble getting back and forth to their shifts. Well, we had to develop some new strategies to get our nursing residents into their shifts at Maine Med. And so it became even more important for us to put our energy into. We're lucky enough that Maine Med reengaged a number of years ago out here at our little health center, and we have a nurse practitioner who comes out, and so we're able to have 3 days a week of clinic time on peaks. We've had our own set of COVID vaccination clinics here, and if people are hesitant to leave the island, I think one thing that's true about islanders up and down the coast is that they're really joiners. I mean, you know, Amy, you know, started this wellness center on Long Island. Each island has a core group of people who are so interested in healthcare and make things happen. And I can really mostly speak for Peaks Island that, you know, I meet people who, you know, have a meeting to go 5 nights out of 7 having to do with different aspects of the social fabric of our islands. So it's been an interesting 35 years living out here on Peaks Island.
Well, speaking of Peaks Island and speaking of the clinic there, joining us now, Kitty Gilbert, who is the family nurse practitioner with Maine Medical Partners Family Medicine on Peaks Island. Kitty, thanks for calling in and good timing.
Yeah, good. It's my pleasure. And I wanted to say hi to all the celebrities I'm hearing, Chuck and Sharon and Amy. Just what a great group of folks. And we all sort of know each other because of the work that we do out here. So,
What are the biggest challenges you face delivering care on an island? I think Dr. Radis mentioned you're there 3 days a week.
Yeah, so 3 days a week. Well, I have to say, it's in reading your book, Chuck, and I think there's so much that we can relate to sort of in general, but a lot of things have changed too, and I really benefit from the support of being part of a much larger system. So we're supported by Maine Medical Center and Maine Health, and so I have access to a lot of resources. So I would say I'm really fortunate. I practice with a staff. I have, you know, a couple of staff members that come with me. I have a medical assistant and I have a nurse on Wednesdays. And we have, you know, we really have benefited from that relationship. So in that way, a lot of things have changed. And I would say the challenges of practicing on an island are, I mean, as a provider, pretty minimal for me. In fact, it's actually a sort of an enhancement of practice, I would say, to know the community and practice in a community where I, you know, where I've been for a while and get to know the people and kind of can help them and advocate for them and help them to interface with the bigger health centers in town. So in a way, I don't feel as it's really a challenge so much as it's an opportunity. And a really great opportunity to work with a small community.
And I'm wondering, you're working on the island, you do get to know your patients really well. Do you think that you're able to have some insights that perhaps nurse practitioners, doctors, nurses who are working on the mainland aren't able to have in today's world?
I think absolutely. I think the fact of sort of seeing people, their lived experience of health and illness, being able to sort of meet people where they are, it's very informative. I think there's a lot we don't understand about health. I think we sometimes feel as if we are distributing this service. And in fact, we're more sewn into the fabric of the community. We're supporting a community and what it needs to survive and thrive. And I would say that it's definitely has benefited me to be out here and to know folks. And I honestly can't imagine practicing in another way at this point. I think this is, we can make the time that we need. We can, people know each other as well. So there's this natural support community that sort of forms around more complex health issues. And of course, I can always reach out to all of these other wonderful people that are on the show today. If we have more complexities or if I wanted to consult with other providers and so on, and we get a lot of really good support. So I think it's, I think it's sort of an ideal setting. Some of the limitations are true, but I think it's really, it's much more, I think this is much more the kind of practice that those of us in primary care imagined when we originally entered the field.
And let me ask you this, and Kitty and Dr. Radis and Sharon Daly, I'm not sure if really you all will have the complete answer to this, but I do want to ask it. There's so much conversation right now about the cost of healthcare, and I'm wondering, Kitty, I'll start with you. Is it more expensive to bring healthcare to islanders, or does it save costs in that it's more expensive to bring islanders to the mainland for treatment?
I think that's a very good question. I think that we are relatively cost effective because we are primary care, by and large, is the least costly aspect of medicine or entry point for medical care. So I think that we do a lot of prevention out here. And as we've been talking about throughout the program, there are a lot of people who aren't going to, are avoiding going into town, and we'd see them much later and much sicker if we didn't have preventive services on the island. So I think there is some cost savings there. I think there are also the bigger questions of how do we manage healthcare? Can we do a better job by having primary care that's more comprehensive, that oversees the family and the community? And I think that those things are in the works sort of on a higher level. And also, we're seeing the success rates of helping people to control their diabetes and their blood pressure and that kind of thing on site. And that's definitely, that's effective, cost-effective healthcare.
Mm-hmm. And Sharon Daly, operating a boat that can break ice and has high-tech equipment on board, is that a cost-effective way to bring care?
First of all, we do a lot more than just the medical appointments. We do a lot for the communities. I mean, we try to support the island community's health as well as the individual. I think it's really, as Kitty said, it's really hard to weigh out those things. For a medical appointment for the person, it's definitely more cost effective for them to come aboard the boat and have an appointment than to go off.
We do need to take another quick break, and I want to thank Kitty Gilbert, who's a family nurse practitioner at Maine Medical Center, for calling in. We'd love to have some calls or questions from our audience. You can call 1-800-399-3566, send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Penobscot Financial Advisors, Maine-based fiduciaries operating from at least 6 feet away, penobscotadvisors.com, and by Tandem Coffee Roasters, devoted to spreading joy since 2012, tandemcoffee.com.
You are listening to listener-supported Maine Public Radio. Welcome, I'm Scott Marshallton here with Mark Vogelzang.
Hello.
Good good morning, almost afternoon, Mark, and we are here asking for folks to support their local public radio station in Maine Public Radio. Mainers across the state have different levels of access to reliable information. We're listening to an amazing show right now that is a staple of reliable information, and that's Maine Calling. And it's donor support, Mark, that allows Maine Calling to do the many varied shows that they do.
And let me just thank you for listening, first of all, and thank you for the thousands of you who are already supporting Maine Public Radio and this important institution and this important program this morning. You know, whether you're in Maine or New Hampshire or farther afield, maybe we've got listeners in Massachusetts and many friends in Southern Maine who have residents both ways, support this organization in a tangible way. And on the other side, close to our border with Quebec, even though it's closed, and New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, the Maritimes are important supporters and listeners of public radio this morning and today. 1-800-866-1475. You can go online at mainepublic.org. Now, the question always comes up, well, what's it for? What am I doing by making a contribution? And also, how much should I contribute? And the answer is, well, simply, you're making sure that this public radio content, this program that you're hearing now in very specific granular terms, continues. But also, you're making sure that the news and the programming that you enjoy on this radio station is there in the future. How much you should give, Scott? We always have a good answer for that.
We always do. And it's really, we ask folks to consider be generous. Make a gift that matters for you. That could be $10 a month. For some, that's $100 a month or $200 a month. Mark, I wanted to mention, we've got a Beacon Society, a group of folks that give at the $100 a month level or $1,200 more a year. The average gift of that group, there's almost 1,000 folks across Maine, New Hampshire, Atlanta, Canada, and across the country that support Maine Public at that Beacon level. Their average support is around $2,500 a year. That's annual support.
Yep,
of course,
right.
They do giving outside of their annual support to help us with important initiatives that we're working on at Maine Public, but it's their annual operating support that really allows us to be there in the community. Because as we know, there are a lot of folks that can't support, aren't yet in a position to support Maine Public Radio, even though they want to. And it's generous donors like this that provide additional levels of giving for their community.
And if you're in a position where maybe you've never made a gift or not quite ready to make a gift yet, but would like to, an entry-level gift of $5 or $15 a month would be perfect. But as you describe, Scott, those who can't right now aren't in a position to do so, but that we all still love to listen, we love to learn, we love to enjoy the programming, and it's available to all. And that's the great thing about this Beacon level giving. It provides this source of office, this sort of availability to the entire community, from north to south, east to west, across borders, across time zones, across the web. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Classical, all the services that Maine Public provides are available at no charge. And we thank you for making that possible. Here's how you can reach us at mainepublic.org or area code 1-800-866-1475. Many friends have been donating at the $50 a month gift level for the 50th anniversary of NPR, National Public Radio, 50 years ago, when All Things Considered started, or the 5 years of Maine Public Classical. Also, this was here just exactly 5 years ago when we had classical music on in this time slot. So thank you for your giving. Thank you for your support. We've got more of Maine Calling.
And welcome back. This is Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, getting health care to Maine Islanders. My guest, Sharon Daly, who is a registered nurse and the director of Island Health Services for the Seacoast Mission. And Chuck Radis is a primary care physician serving Maine Islands and the author of the new book, Go By Boat, about being an island doctor. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, if you're quick, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet or post to our Facebook page. You are getting, Sharon, a lot of love here. An email from Jeff and Judy on Isle of Ho. Just want you to know that Sharon is amazing and is there for us even when she's not on the island. And from Jan, an email. Frenchboro is a small island with a population of about 40 year-rounders. We only have 3 car ferries a week, 2 round trips a month, and from April to November, a Friday round trip passenger boat. We have no store or services here on the island. We have one person qualified as an EMT. The Sunbeam is a lifeline for us out here in so many ways beyond healthcare. They support island health and create a sense of community. We are so grateful that they could bring the vaccine to us. So all that to you, Sharon Daly. An email
Thank you.
Here from Kate O'Halloran. Kate is the executive director of the Life Flight Foundation, and she writes, Life Flight of Maine plays a significant role in island healthcare. We work with local communities on every island in Maine, much more than just helicopters. We bring the ICU to the patient, delivering critical care with a high level of expertise in a coordinated, connected way. Kate, thank you so much for emailing in. And we have talked about Life Flight on Maine Calling before. And Sharon Daly, I want to ask you if you have been involved in cases that involve the Life Flight helicopter or another service of Life Flight.
We've had a couple of emergencies. Unfortunately, when it's usually been foggy and at night, so Life Flight was not able to come the one time that we really needed them. So then our boat is very slow, so we got the fastest lobster boat, which is what people do on the island, and went off, and then they were airlifted by Life Flight once they were on the mainland.
And what about you, Dr. Radis?
Right. Years ago, a decision was made not to develop a helipad or any type of fixed wing kind of transport. We're pretty close to Portland, and our emergency services are covered by the Portland fireboat that churns out with to meet our police with the patients who are critically ill who need transfer to Portland. So Portland comes out with the fireboat with EMTs. They have pretty advanced equipment on board. They're in touch with local hospitals. And so, as Sharon mentioned, so often, particularly when you really need it in the winter with the wind or in the summer with the fog, you really need to have other options than, say, helicopter. And so we are very fortunate that our emergency services have worked very well.
Yeah, and Dr. Radis, this is a big part of your book where you don't only have to have knowledge of medicine to work as an island doctor, but also a knowledge of what might be possible and sort of knowing what the tides are, because that's going to make a really big difference if you have to transport a patient.
Well, it did in the past, not as much now since we have the public safety float on Peaks Island, but in the early years when I was practicing out here, we would have some transfers in bad weather in which the fireboat would come, but actually it would have come up against the wharf and it would be 6 or 8 or 10 feet below where we had the patient. And so those kind of transfers were often very challenging. Really, the incremental changes on Peaks, and I know Chabig Island has developed a wonderful emergency on-island group of volunteers. Long Island has their own, as being their own town now, they have their own emergency boat. I think people have put a lot of work into trying to make those emergencies that, thank goodness, it's not that often that you wish a patient was in the hospital 5 minutes ago. Those things are not all that common, but when it happens, it really helps to have. And we've just recently had a kind of a series of emergencies on Peaks Island that we're so grateful that we have a well-run emergency rescue system that connects us to the mainland.
Peggy on Facebook writes, when Dr. Shaw talks about folks trusting their providers, here they are. And she's talking about you, Dr. Radis and Sharon. When we gave COVID vaccines on Peaks or Sharon's Islands, it was because of the trust the islanders had for these two wonderful people. They knew these providers only wanted the best for them. Sharon and Chuck have watched island families grow up, journey through new life and death, and the trust they have in them was incredible. So again, more compliments for both of you. And let me ask you about that, Dr. Radis. You have been practicing on Peaks Island and the other islands long enough to have seen a generations pass. And I'm wondering if you wanted to reflect on that, on the fact that when you are passing a new parent, it may be somebody that you treated as a child. And when you're walking through the cemetery, you know the person and why they died and why they're there.
Yeah, I like to at least step back a little bit in that, you know, my book took place, you know, in my early years of practice. And eventually, even though I've continued to be very active on the island on the board here, and I do house calls from time to time on Peaks and occasionally to the other islands, my evolution was actually then I went into rheumatology and clinical immunology. And so I, you know, I'm part of that crowd of commuters who are heading to Portland. And even that has evolved in that I've, you know, I'm old enough now that you have a whole new generation of primary care people. But just to get back to your question, it's a wonderful feeling seeing people that you've taken care of. Even now that I take care of some people on the mainland who live on the islands, it's a wonderful feeling to have that duration. You know, I would hope every provider could be lucky enough to plunk down in one place to get to know their community and to get to know eventually, you know, both your successes and failures intimately, and to, you know, even to visit a cemetery, as I sometimes do on long walks where I see people, neighbors who I knew and followed them through their illnesses. So it's kind of a bittersweet thing, seeing people over many, many years as they age, but it's also such a wonderful gift to be able to have been in one place for so long.
And Sharon Daly, next week with the Sunbeam back making its rounds, I'm wondering if anything will be different, and what your hopes and what your emphasis will be as you move into a hopefully post-pandemic world of island healthcare.
Oh, I guess first I would like to mention just about what Peggy said in the trust, and I feel really lucky and honored that, you know, because I came with the Maine Seacoast Mission, that I was trusted from the beginning, and I take that trust very seriously. And next week, you know, the boat was out for a refit for a year just before COVID hit. So it's been a really we have gone a couple of times since, but we've not let people on the boat unless it was for a medical appointment because of COVID. So this time out, we are going to let small numbers of people come aboard the boat, see the changes in it, get a cookie to go. You know, traditionally there's always three kinds of cookies at the end of the counter on the boat. Get a cookie and a cup of coffee to go. And just we'll make lots of home visits and just get back in touch with people. And, you know, it's just going to be a really special time.
Well, we thank you both for taking time to be with us today on Maine Calling. That's Sharon Daly, who is a registered nurse and also the director of Island Health Services for Seacoast Mission. And Dr. Chuck Radis, a primary care physician and the author of the new book, Go By Boat, about being an island doctor in the late 80s and early 90s. Right, Dr. Radis?
Yes. Thank you, Jennifer. It's been a pleasure being and speaking with you. Thank you so much.
A terrific read. Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris. This program will be broadcast again tonight at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Brooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Coveside Healthcare Coverage Options, whose founder Caroline Irwin specializes in helping Mainers transition into Medicare. CovesideLLC.com. By Andrucki and King, representing clients in all areas of family law, civil litigation, and criminal defense in state and federal courts. AndruckiLaw.com. And by Lee Auto Malls, honoring Jessica Gregory of Guilford and all of the 2020 Maine County Teachers of the Year. Learn more at LeeAuto.com.
You're listening to Maine Public Radio. This is your public radio station, and it's a spring sustainer drive. It's our membership drive, a support to keep programs like Maine Calling strong and healthy. We're glad you're joining us. My name is Mark Vogelzang. I'm the president of Maine Public, along with Scott Marshallton. And Scott, as chief development officer, our vice president, this is a perfect time for folks to say, after a great program, a great conversation about island life and healthcare on the islands, to say, hey, this is what brings us together. This is a kind of program that absolutely brings us together.
Absolutely, Mark. And we were talking off air. Maybe this would be a perfect time for a little island, main island challenge.
Ooh, I like it.
So if you're listening, you're on a main island, or you treasure the main islands like we do, maybe now you call in with your support at 1-800-866-1475 or going online at mainepublic.org. Have a little fun. We'd love to recognize all of our main islands. We've done this before a few times, Mark. We've had some different matching grants and challenges of island folks from island to island, and as a friendly challenge. And you know, those of us who like to visit the many islands of Maine, like you and I have, Mark, on our travels, they're wonderful, wonderful communities, Maine communities there.
I will kick it off by an island that's not an island, but our good friends in Deer Isle. Rose Ebsworth has made a Deer Isle pledge of support. We want to thank her and Robert Jackson in Harpswell. And in Addison, Joanne Marion is donating to celebrate 50 years of NPR. Wherever you are, we'd love to hear from you. And whether you're north, south, which part of the coast you're on, there's so many wonderful places, and we've heard about them on the program today. Scott, just some of the Casco Bay Islands. I know you've been intimately involved in the great islands of Peaks and Cliffs and a few others. You want to mention
Oaks Island? There's a few. We do had been doing a little bit of a run swim event.
So tell us about that. Which islands did that hit?
My goodness, it was an odyssey. We started at on Peaks Island. Yep. And swam from island to island. There was about 7 different islands that we swam and ran over. Actually, one of my colleagues, Chris Sweet, was crazy enough to be tethered. We were tethered to each other, and we did this challenge. And it's a good way to visit the islands. Although I think a golf cart would be a much more fun way to travel across the island versus running across the islands. But, you know, the communities really came out, Mark, and they really supported the event. But they also appreciated the fact that folks were there visiting the islands, spectators were visiting the islands and cherishing the communities on these islands. And as Jennifer pointed out today in Maine Calling, there's so many unique pieces, healthcare being one unique piece to island life, and the ability for folks to get the healthcare that they need. And for Maine Public, sharing these stories, illuminating these Maine, very unique Maine stories, it's donor support that we're asking for today that illuminates these things that we are doing in our community that we can bring to all of Maine, whether you live on an island or not. And it's your support at 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org.
We're talking about sustaining memberships, and that's a monthly Evergreen Friend, whether it's $5, $50, or $5,000, you make the decision on what works for you to support this incredibly important community building organization called Maine Public. Think about the Cranberry Islands, and think about places like North Haven and Vinyl Haven, and our good friends, who lots of listeners on Matinicus and elsewhere. Where do you love to listen to Maine Public? If you have a favorite spot, or if you can't wait to get out to the islands this summer, let us know, and we'll read that on the air. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-866-1475. You can also leave that message online at mainepublic.org when you make a financial contribution, Scott.
And it's your support that creates Maine Public Radio. You're listening from WMED Calais 89.7, WMEF Fort Kent 106.5, WMEA Portland 90.1, WMEP Camden 90.5, WMEM Presque Isle 106.1, WMEH Bangor 90.9, or WMEW Waterville 91.3, and also, of course, online at mainpublic.org, where you can share your support today.
Yep. Be generous when you do that call. We've heard from hundreds of folks already this early in the pledge drive, and we're grateful for your ongoing support. You know, 50 years of public radio, we've been celebrating here, but we've also been celebrating a five-year anniversary, and that is the anniversary of Maine Public Classical, now with seven FM signals across the state and seven FM news signals across the state. And that's also something that we're pleased to be able to bring you. And we hope you'll support this organization, bringing a program like Maine Calling at 11 o'clock in the morning or at 7 o'clock in the evening, your radio station that connects us here across the communities. Be generous when you do call. Do what works for your family budget. And knowing that your dollars will help support this important journalism and independent news that we care about.